Hey, this is Jacob Lewis. You're listening to Neighbors. Thank you for doing so. You'll notice the title of this episode is The Dog Trap Part 2. That means if you haven't heard Part 1, go ahead, start there. For those who have heard it, a quick recap. Joel Rice is a writer.
And I grew up skateboarding in San Francisco at a period where that happened to be the center of the skateboarding world, coincided with my adolescence.
During those teenage years, at 15 to be precise, Joel was mugged and fell on his face in front of his peers and several professional skateboarders that he looked up to.
I hit something that was known as the dog trap.
It was a deep wound that followed him into adulthood. Later, he became a writer and wrote a regular skateboarding column for the online publication McSweeney's. Then came his big break. He was offered to ghostwrite the memoir of Christian Hosoi, one of his all-time skating heroes. It seemed like heaven had come down to earth, but instead it turned out to be a miserable and humiliating process, ending with a meeting at the Cheesecake Factory.
And he literally laughed in my face. And his demand was, I will do this book as long as Joel is not the writer.
From Nashville Public Radio, I'm Jacob Lewis, and you're listening to Neighbors, a show about what connects us. Today, The Dog Trap, Part 2. Hey, Christian, this is Jacob Lewis calling you from Nashville Public Radio. I'll try you again in 5 minutes. Joel describes Christian in a kind of bipolar sort of way. One minute, he's kissing the ground he walks on, saying how fun and charming he is. The next, he's describing him as manipulative and self-absorbed. But the one thing he was consistent on is describing Christian as late. I had called Christian at 11:04 Central Standard Time on May 1st. I left this message. I think this was the time we were supposed to have our interview, but I'll try you again. All right, bye. I got a text 30 minutes later saying, I just got into the car, meaning he was ready to talk while driving to a skate demo.
Hello?
Hey, is this Christian? Hello?
Hello?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, can you hear me?
I sure can. Does this work for you now?
No, you got to turn that down. I got to do an interview. Turn it off. Volume down. Okay. Yeah.
Do you have your kids with you?
What's that?
Do you have your kids with you?
Yeah.
Oh, awesome.
Classic. Eat.
Christian has 4 children. Classic, Endless, Rhythm, and James. I thought I'd start out with a rather innocuous question. What is your relationship actually like with Tony Hawk? Like, is there actually a rivalry or not?
There's never been a rivalry for us. It's always been about the fans, about the people that, you know, love our styles, loved our, you know, basically it's our personalities.
He says their two personas represented two sides of the skating subculture. Hawk was a calculated technical skater, and Hosoi, he was the rock star. But he claims that personally, there wasn't any beef. And can you tell me about your book? What was that like, doing that?
The book was an amazing experience because, you know, you're trying to walk through your life, and it was a memoir.
He spoke excitedly about the process, but he does own that the literary world was new to him.
Publishing and book writing and how to write a memoir, that took me a little minute for me to get that around my head.
And then I bring up the real reason I called him. Do you remember Joel, the guy that I was talking about earlier?
Yep, Joel Rice? Joel was a big part of the process of the book.
Yeah, what was it like to work with him?
Joel's a nice guy. He loved what he did. He was young. I mean, Joel's young, right?
I'm not really... I don't know how old he is, actually. He's 40 and was 32 at the time of writing the book.
Yeah, see, for me, I think he's young. He's a younger guy that, you know, I could see he was passionate about the project, and I love that about Joel.
Well, so what ultimately? How did that end?
The styles went into two different directions. You know, I didn't want to beat up on Tony Hawk.
Just to repeat that, I asked Hosoi how his working relationship with Joel ended. He said the styles went in two different directions, and that he didn't want to beat up on Tony Hawk. The crux of what Christian claimed about his time with Joel is that Joel wanted to tell the story of Christian Hosoi versus Tony Hawk, a tale of their epic rivalry. And Christian says he didn't want to do that, that Tony Hawk was a friend who ultimately wrote the foreword to his book. And to talk about the rivalry would be unfair to Tony.
I didn't want to boast in, you know, my popularity, because I was very popular, you know, and he wasn't popular, but he won all the contests. Like, to beat Tony Hawk was a big deal. And when I beat him, it was a big deal. And so, you know, in my changed, you know, character and my integrity, being a Christian man now and a pastor, you know, I'm like, I care about people and how they feel. It's humility, I guess you could say. That would be a better word for it.
Gotcha.
You know, I don't need to, you know, sometimes tell the truth.
Do you feel like you had to kind of bum out Joel?
Of course it was a bummer, and I knew it was, you know, because, you know, it's a big project, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that, you know, I understand that's a big deal for a writer, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That's why I paid him, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was a good kid. Or we had to say, you know what, it might be better that I go with somebody older.
A guy named Chris Ahrens ended up writing Hosoi's memoir. He was, in fact, older by 6 years. Well, hey, I really appreciate you taking the time, and it was an honor to get to talk to you.
Yeah, tell Joel, you talk to him, tell him, say hello, and love him.
So,
are we live?
We're live. A few days after my phone call with Christian, I invited Joel to the studio.
Welcome.
Thank you.
I explained to him that I called Christian and brought up key points in his version of events.
Every moment where I felt like he should be able to voice his side.
Sure.
I told him that I was going to play the tape and that we would stop at any point if he wanted to say anything about what Christian had just said.
To respond.
I knew this was going to be hard for Joel. This whole thing about losing the book was fresh salt in an old wound. A wound of being humiliated and laughed at in front of his heroes. But throughout the process of us talking over several months, he seemed very determined to face whatever Christian had to say.
I think I'm ready. Okay.
How are you feeling?
The honest answer is excited, but it still feels a little intense, to be honest, if that's of interest.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
If I start crying and weeping, what are you going to do?
Just going to roll. All right. Here we go. Did you want to tell that rivalry story?
That is a outright lie. And or falsehood, fabrication, and mischaracterization. Utterly. But told, I say this with admiration, Christian, if you ever call me. Thank you, note got lost in the mail. He has a way of speaking and narrating that is extremely seductive, extremely rhythmic, extremely coherent. And if I did not know anything, I would 100% believe his characterization and enjoy listening to him talk. I don't know that total falsehood and fabrication is a compliment, but as he tells it, it's beautifully told.
So that took me a little minute for me to get that around my head, but to experience that, to understand how publishing and both writing and how to write a memoir.
If you didn't know anything about this situation, he gave a beautiful, beautiful answer. There's no sense of double dealing, no sense of scandal, no sense of controversy. You totally 100% believe him. And I believe This is one of the things I puzzle over. I believe he is telling the truth as he believes it.
When I originally asked Joel to listen to this tape, he said, sure, whatever I need, and that he'd even be willing to call Christian.
I was so surprised by that.
Really?
That the fact that, you would call Christian up. Like I would set it up and that you both would talk and sure. I would record it.
My wife is mixed about it. I think it's the right thing to do. If you make the judgment that that is better for the narrative, I'll have to talk to my wife one more time because she has some feelings. But if she says yes, I'd like to.
What would you say? Why would you want to do it? Why is it the right thing to do?
To my surprise, Joel brought up what happened at Embarcadero. The threat to be beaten, the demand for his bus passes, and the dog trap.
I felt so guilty that I had, shown physical cowardice and that I had backed down from a fight. Not that I literally want, but I had backed down. I had given in to fear. Mm-hmm. And I always felt...
So you wish you would have stood up for yourself.
Stood up for myself. Yeah, in a dignified way. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably healthy to do because he was able to upend my life, Christian pastor put, turn my life into a living hell. Mm-hmm. I just think it would be healthy if it meets with your sense of what a narrative would be, just to have a talk and say, did you behave as a Christian towards me? And where do I live and what's my last name?
Okay. After the break, Joel and Christian talk.
Hello, neighbors, listeners. This is Mac Linebaugh, and I'm one of the editors of this show. If you have any questions about this episode, the show in general, or you're just curious about what Jacob's really like, now is a good time to ask.
That's right. Mac and I are going to answer your questions 1 week from the release of this episode, and we're going to do that right on this very podcast.
Go to neighborspodcast.com/ask.
The link should be in the show description right where you're listening.
Once you're there, you can write out your questions, or if you're feeling really adventurous, you can record a voice memo and upload it to the forum.
And we will do our darndest to get it answered in the best way possible, and I think we'll all learn something. Welcome back. When we left off, Joel surprised me by saying he'd be willing to talk to Christian.
Yeah. I think I'd like to. I just want to say my piece. You heard me at the Cheesecake Factory.
This wasn't something that was going to be easy, but Joel wanted to stand up for himself because, as he puts it, he's conflict averse and he'd like to do something about it. I'd like to take this moment to discuss my own motivations here. This series has been full of stomach-churning tension for me. At a certain point, as the story evolved, I started to ask myself, what am I doing here? What's this piece really about? From a purely storytelling perspective, Joel's story is a great story. From a neighbor's a show about what connects us standpoint, the story's a little more complicated. Ultimately, this is a story about Joel's healing and self-awareness. It was never my intention to have someone come on my show to disparage someone else. But that is part of Joel's perspective. So to reveal a little of my own bias here, I'll add my own judgment of Christian up to this point. Yeah, he was late to our phone call, but overall, I thought he was reasonable, easygoing, a little self-interested maybe, but well-meaning. I could describe myself in the exact same way. I'd also say he's kind of what I would think of as the best case scenario for someone who was a child celebrity and then went to prison for meth. But to Joel, Christian was a guy who he felt had slighted him, crushed his dreams, and laughed in his face. So he added one stipulation to calling him.
He has to agree on a set day and a set hour. I'll give him like an hour. If he misses that hour, I don't know if I can do it.
I reached out to Christian and set a day and a time. On the morning of the call, Joel wrote his thoughts down in a notebook with exactly what he wanted to say. Then about an hour before our time to talk, I got a text from Christian. Can we reschedule for 12:30? I called Joel and asked him what he thought. That was an hour and a half after we said we would talk. Joel said he was close by and he would just come and make his decision here. We sat outside in the parking lot of the studio.
With regards to Mr. Osoy, we've alleged that he's a monologuist.
Yeah.
I myself can be a monologuist, so I'd like you to remind me whatever I say to tell you exactly what I did today and where I came from to be here right now.
Oh, okay. Do that.
All right. I'm very close with my wife's grandmother, and she was hospitalized last night. And without exaggeration, I think she might be on her deathbed. But I told her I was coming to NPR today, and she was lucid enough. She said, "You are?" And she put her hand on me. I said, "Would that be all right if I go around 11:30 or 11? And she put her arm and said, "Wow." So I came here to do this, and I think that will color today.
Just to be clear, I don't work for NPR. But the point was, Joel was kind of risking a lot by just being here. I sat and ate my lunch on the curb as we talked. He didn't have anything because he also chose to leave the restaurant he was about to order at to come here and talk this through.
Well, here's what I want to say. Is yesterday you said, "I will do this only..."
Yeah.
This is the condition you gave
me.
Yes. "Only if there's like a 1 hour window, and if he doesn't do that in an hour window, then no." But I took that to mean we set a time, and if he doesn't call or if he doesn't answer.
Right.
And this is a little more like inside social norms, but on the edges. Because it wasn't like, "Can we reschedule for tomorrow?"
Right.
It was, "Can we reschedule for an hour and a half from now?"
Yeah, for sure.
For somebody coming from where you're coming from to get here, it's the most inconvenient thing
No. Let me interrupt you. Unless you tell me this is not good for your show.
I mean, this is the show.
Okay, this is the show. So I guess I'll revise.
I really need you to not consider me at all in
okay,
this.
Okay, all right. Well, this is how I feel. I'm determined to talk to him and say my piece, and I'm going to make it work. I hope it happens today. Okay. And that's what I want to do. That's what my wife wants. That's what my grandmother would want. And that's the right thing to do. If this goes on for any longer, in 2 days, you tell me. But I don't think it's healthy to do this for more than like 48 hours.
Joel left and grabbed some lunch. When he joined me and my producer Caleb back at the studio, he looked real nervous. I asked him what he planned on saying.
I'm hoping in a dignified way to, in a respectful way, just sort of tell him what he's meant to me positive, what he's meant to me negative. And then I'm going to just say, "What do you remember about the last time we spoke?" And I'm going to give him the floor.
Mm-hmm. Well, The only thing that I'll add is what I don't want him to feel, or what I don't think is fair to him. I don't want to blindside him.
Jacob.
Hey, Christian. How's it going, man? I'm doing well. So I have Joel here with me. And
Joel. Yes.
Yeah, hi, Christian. And I'm just going to turn it over.
Hi, Christian. How are you? Good. How are you?
Doing good. How's everything?
Very, very well. How's your wife and family?
Good.
I debated whether or not I was going to tell you this, but I think it'll feel appropriate and in keeping with, I believe, our shared Christian faith.
Joel goes on to explain that his grandma might be on her deathbed and that she gave her blessing for Joel to come here and do this.
I've enjoyed hearing you pray. If you'd say a few prayers, I think...
Yeah, what's your grandma's name? All right, I'm going to pray for her right now. Okay?
Please.
Okay. Lord, I just lift up Roxanne to you, God. I just pray that you would minister to her, that your angels would be encamped about her. I pray that you would do a miracle healing, God.
They pray together for about 3 minutes.
And so I thank you for it, Lord, in Jesus' mighty name. Amen.
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 Thank you. Thank you.
For sure. For sure.
Really appreciate it. I truly do. But I know you always have, you know, obligations, kids, career. I'd love for you to just be able to give me as much time as attention as you can to this conversation. I would appreciate it.
Jill starts in with the positive things. Basically, Christian was an inspiration to him. One time in a sermon, he heard him say that it's never too late. That meant a lot to Joel, so he told Asoy that. But after the gratitude, things got a little more tense.
Well, listen, I do want to talk about where our relationship, where our working relationship fell apart or went wrong. It would mean a lot to me. Let me say
what's
this.
What's your overview?
Yeah, yeah.
What did you have in your mind?
Yeah, yeah. Let me ask you this. Do you remember the last time we spoke?
Not exact, you know, last time, no, because we talk so much. Mm-hmm.
Anything about the day, who was there?
No, I mean, how would I pinpoint that?
Mm-hmm.
That was Joel's whole strategy.
Okay.
To ask Christian if he remembered the last time they spoke, and then give Christian the floor. So as Joel kept trying to refresh Osoy's memory with outright telling him what happened, Christian spoke up and gave his recollection of what happened between them in general. That Joel wanted to tell the Hosoi-Hawk rivalry story.
I was not feeling comfortable with the puffed-upness. It was hard for me to, you know, say that that's me, because that's not me. You know, mm-hmm. if I'm going to be speaking mm-hmm. now, if somebody's speaking mm-hmm. about me,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, and saying, oh, this is what I think of Christian. He was this guy, and Tony was that guy. Well, that's not me mm-hmm. speaking first person mm-hmm. memoir book.
I'm going to interrupt you.
Yep.
It's very hard
yep.
for me to do.
Yep.
What you're saying is not true. I'm
going to
tell you what happened.
Joel spells out his version of events. That there was an agreement to write this book. The publisher thought he was a great writer. Joel made editorial decisions based on trying to listen to Christian.
And during the course of our work together, in the year that we were meant to be writing a book, do you know how many interviews you granted to me? In a year. Do you know how many?
I have no idea.
Zero.
And what do you mean interviews?
We had made an agreement to write a book together. That book was dependent on
interviews. Well, let me kind of clarify.
No, hold on. I'm not done. I'm
going to
say my piece. No, I do not. No. I'm going to say my piece.
You don't want to have a conversation.
Okay, all right, go ahead.
Well, then it's your word against mine.
It is.
You know, for me, I can tell that you have some sort of, like, you know, resentment or something, like, because you're saying binding, you're saying you have an agreement.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like,
okay, no, that's fine. That's fair. That's too aggressive. That's fine.
I've been in situations like this where some kind of conflict happens. In the aftermath, there are many different versions of what happened. You hear one side's version, and it rings thoroughly true. Then you hear the other, and it's also true. But the two versions are shaded so differently.
I was pretty kind about, you know, how we departed ways.
Oh!
You know what I mean? I was.
Wow. You were.
I mean, like
you
totally.
Were.
Like,
oh.
when this all happened, I was bummed because you didn't want to listen to how I was saying, I don't want it to be written like that. You know, for me, as a person who's comfortable in my skin, who believes what I'm saying is true, you know, I may not have the complete facts straight on where I was sitting or what, you know, was said verbatim, but I can tell you, I was not happy with the pages that you wrote. And Joel, I appreciate it.
Okay.
This relationship that, you know, but if you want to share, you want to vent to me, you want to vent, you know what I mean? Please do.
Okay.
I'm all ears.
Okay, sure. Okay.
And Joel did.
You literally laughed in my face.
Okay, let me put it this way. No one has ever treated me as disrespectfully as you treated me.
I felt incredibly exploited.
Incredibly used.
And incredibly degraded because I had trusted you. And it...
Oh, my and
it,
gosh.
It, no, Christian, really, seriously.
Okay,
and,
yeah. If you had something that was bothering you, as a pastor and a Christian brother, you should have called me and said, hey, here's how I feel. And we would have walked through it.
Right.
You know what I mean?
There was one last allegation that Joel had. And I can't say I was surprised by it, but it seemed like Joel was really doubling down with this one.
I believe that you treat many people in the way you treated me. I really believe that.
Okay.
I really believe that. So, let me say this. Let me ask one question. I ask it with total sincerity.
So how do you get that information?
It was as if Joel was fighting a much bigger battle. One that was about more than just losing this book.
You know, are you okay, Joel? I mean, is everything all right in your life? This is probably just an overview of what, you know, didn't work out in the first place.
Hey, Christian.
Yeah.
This is Jacob.
Yep.
Hey, man. Here's what I think. I think that's plenty. I'm just going to take charge of this for a second. I think that's plenty. I'm going to hang up. I think it would be really helpful if I just did like a 3-minute debrief with you on the phone about my intentions, just so you understand what's going on, because I feel like that's been a little lost in this translation. I think that would be helpful. So if that's okay, I'm going to go ahead and hang up and then just call you back.
Okay, thanks.
To give you some context. Yes, absolutely. All right, thanks. Bye. I ran to another room and called Christian. That was kind of a train wreck, I said. He agreed. I assured him of my intentions and that I hope he didn't feel thrown under the bus. He continued to ask if Joel was okay. I said, honestly, I don't know. I thanked him for his willingness to do this and hung up. Then I walked back to the studio where my producer Caleb was talking through what just happened with Joel.
What's going on here? It's debriefing. How do you feel?
Terrible.
Terrible.
Awful. I'm humiliated.
You're humiliated?
What do you need? Like, do you need me to stop recording? Do you need to yell? Do you need...
Could you start recording, I guess, for 10 minutes?
Absolutely. What followed was a very raw conversation by a ghostly white and utterly defeated Joel. I won't say much else about that conversation except for one thing. At one point, Joel looked off into the distance and said, quote, "He won." I suggested that we didn't do anything more right now, but take the weekend to cool down, process what just happened, and revisit it later.
All right. So,
it's Monday. Tuesday. It's Tuesday. It was 4 days after the call. I asked Joel how he thought it went.
I thought it went well. What did you think? in all seriousness, I'm embarrassed.
Okay.
I regressed. What was so powerful was to pray with Christian. That was so meaningful to me and so beautiful.
Can I ask you a question about that? Because I felt this, I feel strong enough to say this.
Sure.
I felt this the same way when you, kind of how you had structured your questions to him, like about, I'm going to say some positive things. Was it really meaningful? I just need to know, was it really meaningful, or you just need to
try to have some positivity in this?
It's a really good question. I asked myself, is this theater or did I feel this? And I felt it. And it reminded me that I had lost perspective. And he has many positive qualities that are real that I forgot. Okay. And I felt to the edge of tears. Okay. Sincerely. Okay. That was not the entire conversation. I deeply regret going on the offensive rather than sharing my story in a sincere, non-accusatory way. I regret my entire approach. I felt like a 13-year-old, felt younger than that. I felt like I was a 9-year-old reading Thrasher.
The magazine.
Yep. And his voice had a power and eloquence that was overwhelming. I was never able to quiet a voice that said, a feeling that I was utterly unworthy to be in the presence of someone who was my childhood hero. I had made him a monster rather than a fallen person in a fallen world with real flaws. He hurt me, but I in no way was in a position to condemn him. The more honest answer was, I felt very used, but it was very much because I felt personally betrayed by my childhood hero.
Joel told me that morning that he didn't realize how much bile was inside of him. It just started to come out. But now that it did, he could see things more clearly. And I have something to say about that. I want to acknowledge, like, incredibly vulnerable. Incredibly vulnerable. And I'm very... what's the word? Grateful and joyful at your perspective of what happened. I think one version of this narrative could go, guy makes an ass of himself in front of hero, lives in shame for the rest of his life. That's not how this went. It was guy confronts very, in the moment, somewhat gracious hero, has massive, like, slays his dragon in a different way, in like a very massive kind of revelatory way, and can go on to live his life.
Yep.
Like, that's what I hope this story is.
It was a very healing experience, and I feel really good about it. And I never felt good about how it ended, but I feel very good about how it ended.
I'll do the most basic maneuver.
That was an ollie. Can you do like a kickflip?
Yeah, you know what a kickflip is. So
seeing Joel skate in front of his suburban Tennessee home feels special. Feels like he's cut this 100-pound weight from his ankle, called the dog trap, and now he's bombing a hill with reckless abandon, able to move through the world with an ease. I have this image of this fictitious scene where all these elements of Joel's life are weaved together, where he's lying on the ground in Embarcadero on a cloudy day. Everyone around him is 10 feet tall, and they're laughing and pointing at him. And there's Christian with horns taped to his head. Then all of a sudden, the sun comes out, and everyone gets smaller. And Joel stands up, with a firm posture, relaxed shoulders, and realizes he's the same size as everyone out there. And he hits a ramp and skates off with his friends.
Yeah.
Neighbors is from Nashville Public Radio and produced by me, Jacob Lewis. If you like the show, the kinds of stories I'm telling, the production value, please leave a review. You can probably click some stars in the app you're listening to right now. Also, I really depend on you spreading this show via word of mouth, a tweet, a text to your grandma. I value every new listener that comes our way, so thanks for helping make this thing what it is today. Let's keep it going. Also, don't forget, if you want to ask me a question and get it answered on air, visit neighborspodcast.com/ask. I'll answer it in the next episode, next week, in fact. Production assistance for this episode is from Paola Mora, editing by Mac Linebaugh, Anita Bug, and special editing help to Galen Beebe, music by Poddington Bear and Tony Gage. As always, I'm Jacob Lewis, and I am reminding you to get to know your neighbors.
Can I do an impression of a soy lap?